Rodney Malcolm Hogg. Now, Hoggy's brought to you by Sensational Seafood Sundays at Ribera's North Melbourne. For just $99, enjoy a two-course lunch for two, including a bottle of wine. That is a Sensational Seafood Sunday as well. Friday is Friends of Ribera's, and that means six freshly shucked oysters and a beer for just $15 between 4 p.m. and 7 p.m. For the freshest and best seafood, you can't go past Ribera's at 480 Victoria Street, North Melbourne. Just a 10-minute walk to Etihad. Give them a call. 9329-1634 to book. 9329-1634 to book. Or Google Ribera's, and the rest is easy. Let's talk some cricket.
I was throwing rocks at the TV when Faulkner was a sixth bowler used. For Michael Clarke to come on the fourth bowler in front of Faulkner is an absolute disgrace. What a load of junk that is. Kim tried to tell me one day, I think it was about 84, and West Indies, he tried to tell me it's a team game. And I said, no, it's not, Kim, it's an individual's game.
Right, you're bloody well right.
On Halftime, right, Rodney Hall.
Right, you're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
Yes, it's always nice to catch up with Hoggy on a Tuesday. He's back again to talk about the world of cricket with us. G'day, Rocket.
How are you, mate?
Yeah, look, I'm going well. I'm going, where do we find you today, Hoggy? What's going on? Out and about.
Just out and about. But I thought because the Ashes are coming up pretty shortly, the 8th of July is at Cardiff and then the 16th is at Lords, so the first two test matches aren't very far away. I sort of feel that if you're 1 or 2 nil up after the first two, then you... And they've got to beat us in this. They've got to get the Ashes back. They've got to beat us in this series. So if we're 1 or 2 nil up, there's no problems after that. And I thought we'd just look back at 2005, 2009 and 13. The first two test matches in those particular series, because I can remember them like they were yesterday. I was there for, you know, every ball in every day reporting back to SEN. So just have a little bit of a chat and if you're happy with that.
Yeah, love to. That's good for business here. I'm very, very happy about that. Just tell me, before we get into the nitty-gritty, when you come off a series like the Australians have had, and it could have been anywhere through your time, like a preparation series, I mean, how different is the mindset and the mood of the camp in that preparation series as opposed to building up towards the big trophy, which, of course, is the Ashes?
You're probably talking about beating the West Indies easily. Well, I wouldn't say that. From a team morale and confidence and we can do this sort of thing and we're looking like we're a very good side, that's a great series. But the perfect lead up to an Ashes really would be to actually physically play a first-class game down at Trent Bridge and a first-class game at Lords. That would be in the perfect world. But we don't do that anymore, so I don't even know what the lead up is to the first test. I assume there'll be some form of 2 or 3 day game on. But the team now goes across to England, cock a hoop. And obviously what we did to them last time, we've got confidence for the last series, but, you know, obviously it's in England and we've lost the last three Ashes there, which, you know, you can't take that lightly. And still with Anderson and Broad still in that team and they've been part of the last couple of winning Ashes over there, you don't want to take it lightly, but certainly the team will be going there with a lot of confidence.
But even back in your day, Hoggy, was there a sense of urgency after that series, whatever it was and however hard you had to work, was there a sense of urgency or really channeling your energy into the Ashes campaign? Because that was always the big one.
I don't think so, no. I think you played in the Australian summer as hard as you could and then you waited to see if you got picked to go to the Ashes and then you trained accordingly. Yep. I think we went off on a couple of... We had a... first test match ever, I think, or there was certainly a little series over in Sri Lanka on the way to England, so we did that sort of as a lead-up to get ourselves going, and obviously Sri Lanka weren't a powerhouse in those days, they were just starting, so it was sort of a bit of a warm-up series, but we had a few games, you know, the guys were forming, the team was being formed prior to the first test match based on a few first-class games, but that doesn't happen anymore, so... You've really got to, the modern day cricketer's got to be cherry ripe when he lands in England, doesn't he?
Yeah, well, I suppose the calendar demands that now because there's not that big break in between the summer and then the Ashes tour. It's always cricket non-stop up until that point that the calendar demands you be ready to go any single time. Tell me about 2005, Hoggy, when you're reminiscing and trying to find out some data in the preparation for this Ashes series. What's 2005 have to say?
Well, the first day I remember like it was yesterday because that was the morning of obviously the morning of the launch test match. we're walking down St John's Wood's, a street that the railway station, there's a street out the front of St John's Wood. That's usually got cars going up and down. But there was a real real feeling about that test match. I think they'd given us a bit of a jumped us in the one days. They'd formed a four-pronged pace attack. They were going to give it to us. There was a real feeling that there might be something going to happen down at Lord's. That was the morning when I walked past. You know, I got pushed against the, unfortunately, I lost my ticket to get in that first morning. I was affected by the police, not with alcohol, but just, anyway, I won't tell you, I won't go into that too much, but I lost my ticket that morning. So I couldn't report back to West End for the very first ball, but eventually I got into that game, and I can remember it was an overcast morning, and the wicket was a little bit, had a lot in it, and it was, and Harmison bowled extraordinarily quick and set a real tone, and Langer got hit on the arm. I think he might have just about had a fractured arm, and then Ricky Ponty got hit on the cheekbone and might have had blood gushing out of his cheekbone. So it was a really tense, one of the most tense mornings I've ever seen. And we didn't go too well. I mean, they really stuck it up us that first morning. And I remember going, we're all out for 190 with no one getting a 50. And this is the team: Langer, Hayden, Ponting, Martin, Clark, Cadditch, Gilchrist, Warren, Lee, Gillespie, McGrath. So it's a very, very great Australian side. And
yeah,
all out for 190 at Lord's on the first day. So, and that was by T. And I remember T, I had to go into the room to do one of those little speaky things. And there was about 180 English people in there. There's nothing worse than going in a room half where there's a cocky Englishman. There's 180 of them. And they're all going. And they've just knocked us over for 190. And I couldn't say anything. Here I was. We'd sort of been killing them for about 10 years, hadn't we? 12 years. So they were all back. Here we are, we're back again. And we had this little sort of, and they didn't have the TVs on, and all the crowd went back a little bit after tea. And unfortunately, all the crowd had gone, because just after tea, McGrath went through them. Troscothick went for four, Strauss for two, Vaughan for three, Bell for six. But unfortunately, the crowd had disappeared. I didn't have the opportunity to say, hey, hang on, fellas. And that's when McGrath took 5 for 53, following up Harmison's 5 for 43, and we bowled them out pretty much about the same score.
155 it was. In fact, that day, McGrath had the first five because he got the top four, and then Flintoff came to the crease and got him out for a duck off just four balls. So he had all five wickets up until that point, Glenn McGrath, and they were 5 for 21.
It was a superb. He saw what had happened to us, and as I said, it was a fair bit. There was a lot in that wicket, so McGrath came out and really gave it to them. So turned the game back to us. Brilliant. And that was the first time we'd seen Peterson, who got a 57. I remember they were watching that delivery from Warren. A shortish ball, he pulled it on the, and it was going to be an easy four, and perhaps even might have just been going to clear the pickets. And Martin took one of the all-time screamers in test match cricket on the boundary up on the high side of the hill. To dismiss him for 57. So they were knocked over and they were trailing. So that was an amazing turnaround by the Australian cricket team. I mean, you sort of thought then, well, if they can give that to us, we can give them whatever they give us. And then we came out in the second innings and got a big 384. And that's Michael Clark in his 13th test, got 91, and 384 was too much for them. And that's, but Peterson was 64 not out, batted brilliantly. McGrath again, 4 for 29. Lee 2 for 58 and Warney 4 for 64. And that's about the time that Warney started this Shermanator with Bell. He was all over Bell, and the start of his, Bell was just about starting his career. But he wasn't all over Peterson, because as I said, Peterson 64 not out. And we won that game very convincingly. So that was an easy victory by a great Australian side. And we just thought we were going to roll through and win the Ashes. And then we went to Edgbaston. Is there something else out of that game you wanted to talk about, or?
No, we just, you've covered the most. I mean, Glenn McGrath's figures there were fantastic. He was 9 for 82, got the man of the match on us in that game as they headed to Edgbaston. And we know the end of this story, Hoggy, the 2005 Ashes. We know the outright end. So you're 1-0 up, the Aussies. We're only 1-0 up.
One thing just out of that, we hadn't realised that Jason Gillespie's career was just about over. He'd lost a good yard in pace overnight. And at that Lord's Test match, he took none for 30 and none for 18. But we didn't know that at the time. I saw him get slogged a little bit in a one-day game, but that's just a one-day game prior to that. But certainly after that Test match, you sort of realised that Jason wasn't the bowler he'd been, the superstar that he'd been So we got to Edgbaston, and that's the famous time, isn't it? I remember that, again, there was this mini tornado or cyclone had gone through Birmingham prior to that second test match, and dumped a lot of rain. And I remember that John Inverary was coach of Warwickshire. He told the coach of Australia, John Buchanan, we always bat first. You always bat first because the wicket deteriorates. So he'd given that knowledge on a couple of occasions to the Australian hierarchy. But this rain made the Australians, whoever's making decision on the toss, made them a little bit wary. They sort of thought, oh, perhaps it's, you know, got underneath. It might seem around. But that wasn't to be. And that's the morning that McGrath probably stood on the cricket ball and virtually lost us. We didn't lose it for us, but that was a moment that certainly swung it round. All this 14 or 15 or whatever years that England had dominated, that morning when McGrath stood on that ball was the moment it turned round for English cricket. And I know he was driven to the hospital after standing on a ball, and he was driven by a bloke who'd been rubbed out for being testing positively to drugs. Banned substances. One of the Warwickshire players drove him to the hospital, which is a funny sort of thing to do, but anyway. And then so we won the toss, and
put him in.
In the history of Test cricket, we put the opposition in half. And in the history of Test cricket, you put an opposition in, you don't expect the opening partnership to be. You might have some stats here, but I think they got a pretty good start on
112.
And in a day's play, they made 407 in a day's play. They made 400.
Yeah, 5.13 and over. 79 overs, they made 407 at just over 5 and over. It was an amazing day's cricket.
Well, Triscothy got 90 in 102 balls, and Peterson 71 in 76 balls, and Flint off 68 and 62 deliveries. And I remember doing a little speaky at lunchtime.
Another cashy. Another cashy for you.
No, there's no cash in England. There's no cash in Australia. There's no cash in England. Please, if you don't mind. And I just remember doing this, just putting a bit back into the game doing this function. I came out, I just was shocked because just Peterson and Flintoff started a partnership prior to lunch. And as I said, Peterson scored 71 and 76 balls and Flintoff 68 and 62. And I come out and they'd added over 100 runs in about 60 minutes. It was just amazing. And I was in time to see Lee getting hit back over his head for six by Peterson and Flintoff. Just amazing. So Edgbaston, 407 in a day. And this is when you put the opposition in. And Lee, Brett Lee, very solid as Brett Lee, one for 111 off 17. Gillespie, two for 91 off 22. And Caswick, three for 80 off 15. So there's three star test cricketers have been slogged around, so the wicket certainly did not favour the bowlers that morning, certainly favouring batting. So all out for 407, and then we went to the crease and we did a reasonable job, but unfortunately we were 100 short, and again no one scored 100, which was interesting. Langer got an 82. I remember the attack. I reckon Flintoff three for 52. Giles starting out a bit there. But Giles got a couple of key wickets.
He did.
Who we don't rate as a spinner. Got rid of Ponting and Clark, two of our top batsmen, which was unusual for a bloke that we didn't really rate as a spinner. Got two key wickets. And that was really the main part of the game. But then in the second innings, Brett Lee got his mojo back and we knocked them over for 182. And again, Flintoff, 73. Was the only batsman stood out. He got 73 off 86 deliveries. Lee was quick with 4 for 82. Gillespie, no good, unfortunately, none for 24. And Warnie, 6 for 46. So we knocked him over. And then I remember the end of the third day's play, we were 8 down. We were 8 down there, second innings, still needing 111 runs on that last morning with 8 wickets down on a wicket where no tail-ender had made a run on it. And in the first innings, I think it's in the first innings, Warnie made 8, Lee made 6, Gillespie 7, and Casper a duck. So it's a wicket that's deteriorated and the tail enders couldn't make runs and their tail end, Jones 9, Giles 8, Hoggart 1, Harmison a duck and Jones 12. So it was a wicket. And then we were, as I said, we were 8 for 175 and then amazing performances by Warnie, Lee and Gillespie on that last day.
Kasperwitz.
Amazing. Casper.
Dizzy made a duck. He didn't do too much for us that day or that that second innings. But you're right, that was the drama pack. That was the photo we saw of Brett Lee and Freddie Flintoff. It was absolutely unbelievable, the scenes that day, Hoggy. And but for a quirk of fate, and this is sort of what we're getting back to today, but for a quirk of fate, McGrath not rolling his ankle on that ball. I mean, this probably doesn't do it. This was the start of England and their dominance, wasn't it?
Yeah, I reckon it was. There was a moment. We got them back again the next series, but certainly against this great side, that moment was the one that allowed them to get back and win the Ashes. And I just want to give some credit. I think I got that wrong because it was Warney got 42 in that second innings.
Yep.
He got 43, not out. Gillespie 20, and Casper, I think, got that got a blob, but he was batting for a fair time. But we, you know, on a wicket, it was up and down. We were 7 for 137, and to get to 279 was amazing because that fast bowling was brilliant by England. Harmison, Hoggart, Jones and Flintoff were very, very fast and frightening, and the courage that our tail showed that day was as good as any tail end, any group of tail enders has ever shown it in the history of the game. And that was the day half I got that 25-1 on Brett Lee being the highest score, and it was amazing that the Warner had made 42 and then Lee just squeezed past for the fourth. Which was very well done by him on the day.
Yeah, well, but well received by you in your pocket, Rodney.
Oh, well, when you're struggling around in these tours, it's all very well if you're working for Channel 9. But when you're struggling around, you've got to pay for your meals and do this and that. A little win with Ladbrokes is always well accepted.
Oh, I'm sure that's right. So they go on. The next match is drawn at Old Trafford, and then they win the game at Trent Bridge, and it's a 2-1 series win in 2005, and they get their mojo a bit.
Yep. Yeah, they got it based on, as you say, McGrath, and they went into that series with aggression. They took in four fast bowlers, and they maintained that for nearly the whole series, and that was total aggression.
It was a very different... Sorry.
Go down to Cardiff now for the 2009.
Yep. Yeah, that was July 2008, the July 2009, the Cardiff Test. And
yeah.
England won the toss, Hoggy, and funnily enough, they batted because they'd learned from our mistake.
Well, they won the toss and batted on a very, very slow pitch. And that was where I think Glamorgan Cricket Club paid the English Cricket Board. I think they paid £1 million to host this first test match because usually the first test match is at Lord's. But they paid £1 million to get that. It might have been even £2 million. I think they're broke now, Carter. Glamorgan Cricket Club, they're broke. But they raised £2 million or £1 million, which is a lot of money, to get that particular test match. And we were up in arms at the time, I remember, because we didn't know much about the pitch and all that sort of thing. Anyway, it was a very, very, very slow wicket. And that was the balls worked really hard that first day. And I remember we didn't get slogged around and no one got a century for the English. Strauss got 30. Bopara, I remember, I reckon he got off. He had no idea on a short ball. He went forward to a Mitchell Johnson ball and got hit on the shoulder. And then I think he tried to drop a slower ball. So Bopara was out of his depth in Test cricket. Person top scored in that first innings was 69. And that was I was working for SBS Free to Air TV.
Oh, yes.
And I was giving that pitch report. And Horrocks had bowled beautifully. I think he took 3 for 95, but it was hard to get their tail out. They all got a few runs. Swanee come in with 47, not out the end. They got 435, but just the signs in that first day's play after tea and the way Horrocks turned the ball, you sort of felt, geez, it's a big turner. And I'd been advised that this is a real spinning wicket. And then as I was leaving the ground that first day, the chairman selectors, what's his name? I've just quickly, Graveney said to me, this game's going to be over in a couple of days. So I came out with SBS. And this was a funny one, half, because I made that big comment that Peterson's score of 67 with the highest score in the test match. And when you go through the batting card the next day of the Australian cricket team, it's an unusual one to make that statement.
Well, considering Simon Caddish made 122, Ricky Ponting 150, Michael Clarke made 83, Marcus North made 125, and Brad Haddin made 121. So you weren't far off, Hoggy. 67 was a good score, just wasn't quite the top score.
Well, it was a hard wicket to stand up because
Swan, who's one of the all-time, probably the, well, the greatest off-spinner for England, I would have thought, he and Laker, he got none for 131 on an absolute turner. So an amazing one. And then this was the game that, this is when the game had to be won or lost, and you sort of think, well, Australia's in the box seat. It was a good declaration. There was plenty of time to get them out. And then the Poms started, and we got knocked over Strauss, Cook, Bopara and Peterson fairly smartly. But then we had trouble with Collingwood. He got 74 in 245 minutes. Pryor batted for 32 balls. I won't worry about the runs they made. It's the actual balls they faced. His tail.
Yep.
Flintoff, 71 deliveries. Broad, 47. Swan, 63. And they were 7 for 159 and then 9 for 233. And they got through, and Bopara faced 35 deliveries, and they got through, and 9 down for 252 as the sun set in Cardiff. And they got away with a draw, which was, you know, one that's just got away. You know, we've lost 6 wickets, they've lost 19, and they still are well short of our total. So it's a game that's been totally dominated by the Australian cricket team not to pull off a victory, which was sad, and that was the one that came back to bite us on the backside, wasn't it?
Well, like the 2005 one, the second test really did start to give England the belief that they could do what they needed to do and win the series again at Lord's. A really polished performance by the English in this one.
Well, that's right. And then, you know, they gutted it out. This Anderson and Broad have been fantastic test cricketers for them. They occupy the crease, and you've got to earn your stripes to beat England. You've got to knock... Well, obviously, the last series here in Australia when Johnson was far too quick for the batsman, it's a different kettle of fish. But normally, Anderson and Broad and Swan have been good tail enders for that mob. So then we went off to Lord's half, and there were signs. You sort of thought Flintoff, 1 for 128, injury troubles with the knee, isn't it? The knee, where you had that funny sort of action.
Yep.
You sort of felt that he's not going to play too much of a role. You didn't think their attack would ever bowl Australia out. And then they won the toss that morning at Lord's. It was a beautiful sunny morning. Perfect morning. And unfortunately, Mitchell bowled at Strauss's pads and they were none for 196. And that was the end of that game. The end of Australia winning that game at Lord's, they certainly dominated with 425 and Strauss getting 161 and Cook 95. We stuck at our guns pretty well. Hilfe got a 4 for 103. Sids was pretty good with 2 for 76 and Johnson 3 for 132. But 435 was far too much. And then Anderson, I remember this, I reckon, because it was a beautiful sunny day when they batted. And then when we had to, just prior to lunch on that second day, it was dark. It was, you know, the clouds had come in and the ball started to swing. And that's what happens in England. It can be a bit of luck. And again, the luck was on their side because Anderson was brilliant. Once it's overcast, Anderson, he'll swing the ball around. And he knocked over Hughes, Ponting, Clark and North. And we struggled to get 213. Luckily, Haddon, Horrocks and Siddle, the tail sort of wagged a bit. Kadich was top score with 48. So we only got 215. So we're up against it, weren't we, with their score of 425. So we were 200 down. And then they batted again. No one dominated. 6 for 311. Let's give Collingwood 54. 5 for 61. And Peterson again, 44. So he's playing pretty well against us. And then I had the privilege to be out looking at those pitches, as I said, pitch reporter for SBS, and the wicket half did not change, just a slight bit of wear and tear at each end with the bowlers, but the pitch stayed the same the whole 5 days. It was an absolute road, and then we had to bat again, and that's when I think Flinthouse, the Flintoff, well, the mistake of Flintoff came to the surface. He may not have been remembered as a great. I think he's remembered as a great in English cricket because he won this test match and that virtually won the series for them. And he bowled, I reckon he was jabbed up for sure in the knee and the ankle or wherever he was crooked, probably both places. A lot of needles went into him to get him up and running in that second. He bowled 27 fast overs and took 5 for 92. Michael Clark made a beautiful 136. Reminded him a lot of Kim Hughes, the way he used his crease with the collar up and the blonde hair. A lot of beautiful driving from Michael Clark, and Haddon got an 80, and Mitchell Johnson slogged a beautiful 63. But Flintoff and Swan bowled us out, and they won that test match, mate. So
the first two tests in both those series, Hoggy, have proven critical. And then as we're looking sort of back to look forward to the Ashes that's coming up this year, you go to the 2013 campaign was a very different campaign in itself. I mean, England won the 2005, 2009 back there as well. In 2013, we'd come off a fairly tumultuous time. We'd lost a coach a couple of weeks before. Darren Lehman comes in, and there's a few changes about. Davey Warner's been sent home back on the B Tour. It was a very different-looking Australian lineup getting to 2013, and the first two tests again really did set up the series, didn't they?
Really, really interesting, because prior to that game, young Agar's, Ashton Agar's mum and dad, unbeknown to most people, had been flown over 2 days before this test match. We didn't know who was going to be the spinner. I forget who he was probably up against. But he was flown over, and he made his debut on the morning of that, obviously, on the morning of the Trent Bridge test match. And it was one of those ones that selected just, I don't know what they were thinking, plucked out of left field, flies over, bang. And this was a game that was marred by controversy of the third umpire. I remember, like it was yesterday, the third umpire played too big a role in this test match. Trott, I reckon, was called back. Again, they only got 215. It was a good morning for bowling. Pattinson, 3 for 69. And Peter Siddle was a brilliant. Peter Siddle that morning, 5 for 50. We bowled him out for 215. So you would have thought, not a great batting pitch, Trent Bridge, but you would have thought we've done a really good job. The conditions didn't favour, certainly didn't favour bowling. It was a pretty flat sort of a wicket, and it wasn't overcast. So 215 was a great performance by that attack. Agar really wasn't required. The three quicks, Pattinson and Mitchell Starc, 2 for 54, bowled very well. Mm. So they weren't, 215. And the blokes that we'd had trouble with, Trott and Bell, Trott got 48 and Bell 25 and Cook 13. So they didn't do too well. And then we came out and we were terrible half. We were diabolical. Anderson bowled probably the one of the balls of the century. He bowled Michael Clark for a duck. A Cowan made a duck, and we were terrible. First four batsmen virtually made no runs, as in Watson, Rogers, Cowan and Clark. And then Stephen Smith, the man who now is a superstar, got 53. And then we saw one of the all-time great performances with Philip Hughes batting with Ashton Agar.
Yeah.
We were at one stage, we were 9 for 117 half on a pitch and in conditions that didn't really, I know that sounds stupid, but didn't favour bowling. I didn't see a grassy wicket out there. I saw a pretty flat sort of a pitch, but the batting was, could have been a bit of reverse swing. Anderson was brilliant. As I say, we were 9 for 117, and then Ashton Agar, where's he come from? How well did he bat? Batted brilliantly with Philip Hughes, and they put on, 163 for the last wicket half.
Yep.
163 for the last wicket, and that kid, Ashton Agar, made 98. And an absolute tragedy to this day that he didn't get his 100, because the ball he off Broad, it was a half-tracker from Broad, and it virtually it was going to go to the fence before. It was in the air slightly, and Swan took an absolute great catch.
Of all the blokes to get him, bloody Swan.
Yeah, no, he's a bit of a pest, Swanny. I'm trying to get with him. Actually, I'm on with him on Wednesday night with Swan at Lord's.
Oh, another Cashy. It's great. That's great.
No.
Another Cashy.
Please.
Cashy.
Anyway, young Agar, disappointed. And he got that 98 off 101 balls half.
He did. Brilliant. I remember watching it.
So he got that lead. You would have thought... that's pretty good. We've just got out of jail a bit there with a lead of 60-odd. But unfortunately, along comes Bell. Bell decided he'd chip in. Pearson got 64. Bell 109. And Broad, this is another controversy in test match cricket. The controversy when Broad smashed that ball to slip and was given not out by an incompetent umpire. Forget who the umpire was. Remember that, Agar?
I do.
And that could have had a big effect on Agar's career, because he ended up with figures of 2 for 60,
2 for 82 off 35 overs. He gets rid of Broad. We win the test match, and Agar's a hero with 4 or 5 wickets. So terrible umpiring, and Broad went on and got 65. They made 375, and we had to chase 300. And then we had a bit over 300, and that's when, again, the batting was pretty standard. Not bad at the start. Watson got us away with 46 and Rogers 52, and they put on 84. Then the rest of the batsmen didn't do too much until we got to Haddon. And Peter Siddle gave him some support. But Pattinson, for the last wicket again, we saw Australia 9 for 231. And the last guys added 65, which is really pretty. If you're a batsman, that is disappointing to see tail enders making runs. But Henderson's performance at the end where he took the last 4 wickets was absolutely brilliant. And it was very sad that Haddon got that bottom edge for 71 because we were so close to winning that game. And bottom edges, in my money, they don't count. They're not really a wicket, are they? We are taught the square cut over the ball, and usually the ball should go to ground. Anyway, got a bottom edge, and he was out for 71, which came from nowhere, and Anderson ended up with the beautiful figures of 5 for 73. So they got that one. They got out of jail their half, didn't they?
They did, and it set up the series. I mean, it was pretty much the summary of the whole series, really, that we weren't quite good enough at any stage. We certainly weren't outplayed by too many in the test matches, and they had their moments and we had our moments, but we just weren't quite good enough. There'd been an unsettled period, Hoggy, and they ended up winning another series. So we get to this year, Hoggy. What does all this mean? We've got through the first couple of tests of each series, and it does seem to be that if you can't get away to a really good start and start to stamp yourself in the first two tests, you have no chance. What does it mean for the Australians this summer, or English summer, with Jason Gillespie saying they're Dad's Army and giving the dossier and all these individual players, England playing a much more aggressive style of cricket, albeit in one dayers at the moment. Can they translate that and take some pressure on, or put some pressure on the Australians for this summer?
Well, the word Dad's Army, I think that's, it's just, it's good stuff, but, it's a little bit of theatrics leading up to the series, but, it's an experienced batting lineup in that the Australian setup now. And I just remember the second test match in 2013 was at Lords, and that pitch had not been watered 14 days out, another function at Lord's. Sorry, mate, that was another. I know what you're going to say, but I went 14 days before that particular test match and the pitch was dry then. I promise you the pitch was dry. So you knew that the Poms weren't watering the wickets, making dry spinning wickets because we'd come off with the losses in India. So they were just preparing turners. So I don't know what. So they cheated in that test match, and that's the one where Swan went through and eclipsed us. But this time around, I don't know what their tactics are going to be, but as I just feel we're going there buoyant. We've got young fast bowlers thriving to get a Guernsey, along with Ryan Harris. Mitchell Johnson's now a megastar in the game of cricket. We've got a spinner, and they haven't got a spinner. So, you would have thought to take 20 test match wickets, you would have thought it's certainly in our favour. And the players would be feeling that. I think they'd be feeling that. And certainly, Lehman would be talking about the last series we won back here. He'd be talking about that all the time. He'd be talking about you've certainly got to have, Johnson's got to have some form of he's got to be all over a couple of their batsmen, doesn't he? They've got to be looking a little bit, looking in the mirror. Now, are they going to go back to trot again at any stage? I don't think they will, but they're obviously. Anyway, they've got a few new players, so they're a side that is experienced. But I think we saw how terrible they were in the World Cup. And I know it's World Cups are a little bit different, but it's not a powerhouse English side. They haven't got a spinner, and we've got depth and we've got fast bowling. So you'd be going over there pretty confident, I would have thought, half.
Sophie, we're back at Sophia Gardens for the first test at Cardiff, and then the second test is at Lord's. So what you're saying today is if you're a cricket fan and they haven't beaten us by the second test, it is all over. But if they have got their tails up, then it's going to be difficult for the Aussies to peg it back.
Well, they have to beat us to get the Ashes. And look, I can't see. You would hope... You would hope. The weather down at Wales is certainly, if you're a betting sort of person, you can sort of look towards, I don't know what the English summer's like at the moment, but certainly Wales, it's a wet
wet ground, and that's one of the reasons it's held them back from Test cricket. Obviously, Wales has only got a small population, so they haven't got, they don't really, it's not a fundraising exercise by the ECB, unless you know, the Welsh Cricket Board put money in and give it to them, so they've done that to get the game. But it's not one that really you've got a good chance of a washed out game and a draw down there. So you might go to Lords, you might go to Lords with a draw, but you would. And the thing about it, I wouldn't be playing Ryan Harris at Cardiff based on that slow pitch. I don't want to see him burnt out. We don't have to go in with him. I'd stay with the same bowlers we used in the West Indies and just keep Ryan up our sleeve.
Well, regardless of what happens with selection in the build-up, we are very, very excited about the Ashes kicking off at Sofia Gardens. 8th of July, we'll be all over it here on 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of sport. And you'll be our main man, Hoggy. You've got plenty of cashies over there. Have a great time when you get there, and we'll chat to you very, very soon.
Steady on, huh?
A lot of cashies. A lot of cashies. Good on you, Hoggy.
Thanks, mate.